Worcester Culture Watch, a podcast connecting you with the local culture scene in Worcester. Art, entertainment, music, and more.
Worcester Culture Watch from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette.
Hello and welcome to Worcester Culture Watch on Telegram.com. I'm Victor Infante, entertainment editor for the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. In both segments today, we'll be talking about some upcoming events around the region, but we'll catch up with reporter Richard Duckett in a moment. But first, I'm here with Craig Seaman. Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Hey, Victor. It's always an honor and privilege to sit down with you and chat about things entertainment in Worcester and Central Mass and outside Central Mass.
And outside. We're going to be a little outside today. I know you've got a rundown of some upcoming concerts for April, but I'm exhausted. I was at the House of Blues till like 11:30 last night.
And why was that?
I was there to see Guy Clark Jr., which was really one of the best concerts I've seen in a long time.
Oh, dynamite.
Just musically speaking and presence speaking. He is a spectacular guitarist. I'm trying to write something, probably not for right away, but just maybe for my own clarity, on the conversation I watched him have, his guitar particularly have, with the history of American blues-based music.
Oh, great.
It was incredible. It was a real privilege to be able to get to see that live. I mean, of course, he did play This Land, which is the big hit right now.
Right.
Which I wrote about a few months ago.
Good crowd, packed.
Sold out show. Absolutely brimming with people.
Now, with the change in, and it's great that blues is actually getting to the forefront of people's ears.
Indeed.
And attention. Where are people listening to this stuff?
I don't know. I honest to goodness don't know. I mean, a lot of it's the internet, but there's a lot of blues out there. In fact, there was an article in the Washington Post not long ago. Gary Clark Jr. was supposed to be the savior of blues.
Right.
Which infers that blues is in danger. I hear about blues shows. We have a few odd bluesmen around town here in Worcester. There's a few in Boston. But I honest to goodness don't know where people find new blues. And is new blues presented as new blues?
Right, absolutely.
Is it being presented as rock? Is it being presented as something else entirely? I don't have the answers to those questions.
Yeah.
And I think that would take a lot of work.
No, but I mean, the climate is so fickle now. It's like you're not hearing it on mainstream.
Yeah.
You're not hearing, I mean, I don't think the Grammys last time really acknowledged any.
No, I mean, they give out a blues.
Earlier before the broadcast,
yeah,
we gave this award to someone who you should be listening to, but
exactly,
you maybe never heard of.
Yeah, and, you know, it's amazing, but I mean, watching that electrifying performance, and it's not a flashy show. It's
right.
Four people on stage, him with an electric guitar.
Right.
He's not dancing. I've seen shows, you know, with the singing and the dancing and the lights and the sideshows,
right,
and the videos. And, you know, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not. And that was just, you know, him and the guitar really was the show.
Right.
And you couldn't take your eyes off of him.
Well, that's a little bit like me seeing earlier in the week, Sunday, at the Wolf's Den in Mohegan, Samantha Fish, another up-and-coming rising blues star.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have a confession to make, although I probably shouldn't. I was smitten by her looks before I even heard a lick of her guitar playing. And she's an amazing guitarist.
She's one of the best up-and-coming guitarists around.
Yeah, and I mean... I'm amazed she's on a big star because she's the whole deal. She got great stage presence. She can sing. She can write. And she can really play a mean blues guitar. And one of her blues guitars she has is a homemade cigarette box with three strings. And the noise is the beautiful noise that she makes out of that is incredible. If I had to describe it to someone, I would say, think Stevie Ray Vaughan meets Stevie Nicks. I mean, she's not an enchantress like Stevie Nicks, but man, can she play. And she definitely knows how to hold a crowd. And something refreshing for me,
mm-hmm,
I mean, the place was packed.
Yeah.
And it was waiting in line to get in, but most of the people were older than me.
That is both a thing and maybe an issue, which is part of the reason blues is having problems right now. I've written about Samantha Fish before. She's played Bull Run up in Shirley. I think she's absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
I love listening to her. But once we've been talking the blues here, tell me what's coming up here in April around the region.
Yeah, well, some of the big acts hitting the concert stage this April include the best-selling female artist of the 90s, a punk rocker turned MV, and I'll review all these in a second, a punk rocker turned MTV pop icon, a legendary 70s glam rock band, a low-rent Radiohead, the self-anointed Jesus of Cool. You probably can guess most of these.
Of course.
A founding member of Pink Floyd, rock's premier poetess, and the unofficial founder of the One Name Celebrity Club.
Ooh.
So
that's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly. And the first one in the Emancipation of Mimi category, we have Mariah Carey.
Of course.
April 2nd at the Bosch Center Wang Theater, Boston. In Ready, Steady, Go category, we have Billy Idol and Steve Stevens, April 3rd at Lynn Auditorium. And I remember seeing both of them at the E.M. Lowe's in downtown Worcester, a sold-out show in 84. Mm. So, and in the not-so-young dudes category, we have Mott the Hoople, 74, April 9, Orpheum Theater, Boston. In the By George Orwellian Paranoia is Alive and Well category, we have Muse, April 10th at the TD Garden. In the What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Great Songwriting category, we have Nick Lowe's Quality Rock and Roll Review starring Los Straitjackets.
I'm going to stop for one second. Because that is a combination of two of my favorite artists of all time. I'm a Southern California boy, so the Straitjackets is
okay. Up. That's your neck of the woods.
That's up there, and Nick Lowe is just the best songwriter ever. What's so funny about Peace, Love, and Understanding? Of course, Cruel to Be Kind.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I can go on, but I just love him. Just a brilliant songwriter.
Yeah, and as you know, which you're probably going to edit if you haven't already, I have a roundup of these shows tentatively slated for Sunday.
I believe that is. I
do go into that, and I do say, and I'm sure you agree, that Nick Lowe is not only the underrated musical legend that he is. He's also one of the coolest guys around. He wrote, as you mentioned, Costello's "What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding." He wrote "Cruel to Be Kind," inspired by a line in a Shakespeare play, Hamlet, and that's pretty cool. He also is the sophisticated popster who helped shape punk rock by producing the Damned's "New Rose," which was widely considered the first UK punk single. And helped shape New Wave by producing Elvis Costello's first five albums, all classics.
Indeed, you really get that's a pedigree and a half.
And what a bizarre in a good way mashup of people.
It is, and when he's just playing, he's practically just a folkie, you know. But he's just so good.
Yes, absolutely. And I just had a few more on the list, and we can always go into deeper and things. In the One of These Days, Roger Waters, Powell, right in the Kissinger category, we have Nick Mason, Saucerful of Secrets. Nick Mason is, of course, the drummer of Pink Floyd, who's just been sick and tired of waiting for a proper Pink Floyd reunion. So he's actually playing the Pink Floyd music that Roger Waters went in touch, the Syd Barrett era, before Dark Side of the Moon.
Nice.
So we're talking, if this works out right, they get the singer from Spandau Ballet singing, I guess, C. Emily play and the other few vocals in that period. But if this works out right, it's going to be a trippy event. And someone I'm sure we both adore in the GLORIOUS glorious category, we have Patti Smith.
I have seen Patti Smith. I saw Patti Smith play the press show on the final night at CBGB's.
That's right. You went to that.
I was near tears. it was amazing.
Yeah, we could talk about Patty for a while, and I don't want to start rumors, and this is not any truth to this. It's just something that could happen. But a very bored and restless Bruce Springsteen's been popping around Boston lately.
Really?
Who knows? I'm not saying he's gonna be there, but who knows? He popped up at an anniversary show she did in New York.
They are friends.
And yeah, they're still very friends. And he was spotted at Dropkick Murphys on St. Patrick's Day, although he never made it on the stage. Who knows? And he's been looking for records with Peter Wolf. And finally, in the Cher and Cher-alike category, we have the one and only Cher, April 28th, TD Garden, who 16 years earlier played her farewell tour at the DCU Center. I think it was still the Centrum Center across the street. So that's a little bit of what's going on.
Yeah, and I think I want to add to that down the road, I believe at the Orpheum, and I believe it's in April. I have tickets, so I should know this. Amanda Palmer.
Yes,
first,
Amanda.
First full set show in Boston in a few years, actually. Is that
yes, Amanda at least, is coming.
Huh?
Amanda is on.
Yeah, that's and I just reviewed her album. There Will Be No Intermission.
Right.
And it is. I found flaws in it, but it's still heartrending. It's still one of the most beautiful albums I've listened to in a long time.
I mean, a lack for a better term, a bad Amanda album or a flawed Amanda album, Palmer album is still better than most people.
It is true. And I think the flaws are what make, in my mind, is what makes the real humanity in that album stand out.
Sometimes flaws are more telling. And that's why people don't go for the slick production all the time.
Slick production's not interesting. Yeah. We were talking earlier about what makes a concert good. We're off mic.
Well, nothing's off mic nowadays.
Nothing's off mic. Everything is monitored. But there have been times you can see an arc, bring it back to Gary Clark Jr. That's just, he has the presence and the power on stage that he can have an electrifying show without a lot of effects.
Right.
I have seen shows, you know, that do have the big videos and all that. And it's entertaining in its way, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not. And I don't know. Sometimes it's a very individual process what makes the difference, I think. Right.
I mean, if this flash, razzle, dazzle, flash, or whatever you want to call it, it should serve a purpose.
It should.
I mean, I used to have an old joke about you could tell when a reviewer is stretching to write something good about a show if they start talking too much about the lights.
Yeah.
It's like, especially if you have a master there, it's like, well, who cares what color the lights are?
Yeah. It's like, you know, I was thinking back, you know, especially pop shows. I reviewed Demi Lovato a few years ago.
Right.
And I was thinking about that concert the other day because I kind of remembered that Fifth Harmony opened for them.
Okay.
And I didn't really know who Fifth Harmony was yet. Right. Because I didn't watch whatever TV show they were on at the time, America's Got Talent.
I got an honest, I'll be honest with you, I still don't know who Fifth Harmony is.
But I got to catch you up with the kids.
I'm playing dumb here.
But, it's like, there's a lot of production value and video projection and stuff on that show, and it wasn't interesting.
Yeah.
She was interesting.
Right.
In fact, her most powerful bits were the ones without that.
Right,
when she's just singing, and she's got this legion of teenage girls that is just hanging on every word. That was powerful.
Yeah.
That was powerful. The rest, I guess it creates a contrast. I don't know.
I don't want to belittle the millennials or whatever.
No.
But it's not necessarily them.
I don't think it is because it's been going on a while.
Yeah, but I think it's we're getting to a point where it's almost like low attention span theater. Everybody thinks, I think it's the Michael Bay mentality almost of like Transformers. Everybody thinks you need a bunch of explosions and a lot of flashes or multiple stimulation with, you know, things that have absolutely nothing to do with things.
Yeah, exactly.
And at the point, it's like, I mean, maybe we're too old school, but we'd rather just, I mean, Samantha Fish, like the show you just saw last night, she had four people on stage.
Yeah, Gary Clark Jr. Captain. Had four people on stage.
And her best special effect was her talent.
Yeah, exactly.
And you did not need more than that.
Yeah, I mean, the House of Blues was changing the light colors a little bit every now and again.
I mean, that's okay. I mean,
it's fine.
I mean, if you go into a Metallica show, a Roger Waters show, with this stuff like that going on, that serves a purpose.
Here's the thing. I reviewed ZZ Top at Indian Ranch.
And probably their biggest special effect was the twirling guitars.
Yeah, well, before that, people were telling that, it's, you know, friends of mine that had seen them, other reviewers I knew who had seen them, were saying, oh, it's going to be a big video spectacle. I'm like, you can't do a big video spectacle at Indian Ranch. You just can't.
Was it?
No, it wasn't. It was really the only stripped, that one of the few very stripped down shows they've done lately.
Yeah, well, if when the Eliminator hit big, that's the one that had like five top ten, and they were scraping hits.
That's
like
the album you've heard of.
Yeah, and they're scraping hits like TV Dinner. I mean, everything on there was destined to be a hit. And that's pretty much their whole signature album. You know, they had a lot of stuff, Tush and other major songs before that. And they played twice at the Centrum in 83, and like with a six-month span, and they played the same show. And there was a lot of flash. There was a scene where a lighting fixture blew up, which was all show, and it was a guy dangling, but it was a puppet.
Okay.
And people saw that show like twice, and people are used to that stuff. And it's ZZ Top. I mean, Billy Gibbons, one of the greatest guitarists ever. I mean, they, you know, they got the band. I mean, their looks enough. You don't need, and their tunes. I mean,
exactly. You don't, they can prove that they're extraordinarily powerful with just the three of them playing.
Oh, absolutely.
They did pull out the twirling guitars, but only for one song.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody, I think that made everybody.
I mean, that was one of the Back in the Future movies, too. So you expect that.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like, I think I like Indian Ranch because sometimes you do get artists like that that are accustomed to playing bigger stages, and they're in a set where, you know, maybe the video is expected and the light shows are expected, even country does that now.
Right.
And you wrote about Carrie Underwood in a flying car at the ECU Center.
Yeah, and I said, is Jesus driving her car?
I think Indian Ranch, because I think it really shows what artists are made out of.
Right, and absolutely. I mean, summertime, people like outdoor venues.
Uh-huh.
Indian Ranch is the purest outdoor venue you're going to find. It's easy to get to, at least for us, but it's really easy to get to for anybody. There's not a bad seat in the place.
No.
It sounds great. And you don't expect to see a group like ZZ Top. The one that surprised me a few years ago, and it's the only time I've ever seen, I've seen him like 20 times, and it's the only time I've ever seen him in daylight hours, is Chris Isaak.
Yeah. I wish I'd come to that. Chris is always a hoop.
But, and one of his signature moves at the end is he comes out with a disco mirror suit, which is made out of mirrors.
Yeah.
And it's the first, and the disco ball shines on it. He had sunlight shining on it. And it's good to see the stripped down stuff. And in Indian Ranch, although they have a little bit of repetition here and there, the acts are all great acts. And the bread and butter is singing and playing.
Yeah.
They don't need the razzle dazzle, and it's a pure venue.
Yeah, and I've brought this before. It's like seeing Huey Lewis in the News there.
Right.
I was shocked at how that venue just really highlighted just how good that band is.
Yeah.
Because you get very focused on Huey Lewis. But when you're paying attention to the News, that's one of the best backing bands I've ever seen.
They're probably the best bar band you could probably get.
Yeah.
And people forget, you know, even though that they were an overnight success story, it was like 10 or 20 years behind
exactly.
And these guys are seasoned players.
Oh,
and the bottom line is, even before their breakthrough album, Sports, they're still the top of the game. I mean,
definitely.
And Indian Ranch is always a thriller. If you get a chance to catch the show, the one I'm playing is Melissa Etheridge this year.
That's going
to
be
fun. Yeah, and to me, that's the big surprise one this year there because she's never played an outdoor venue like that, at least around here.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised to see her on the schedule and happily surprised. All right, I think that about wraps this segment up, doesn't it?
Very good.
All right, well, we'll be back and more in a moment, but right now, this is Old Men Die in New Suits by Michael Caine and The Morning After.
I thought you were calling.
what to do. Season 3 is too young to go. Now when it's all about the pills and the smoke and the booze and the joke, we're all gonna go someday. Seen it all a few years back, thinking I may look past all that time when we were torn in two. I said, oh man, die in new suits and old habits die.
Welcome back. You've been listening to Old Men Die in New Suits by Michael Caine and the Morning Afters. He's going to be playing a gig, as I recall, out in East Hampton sometime this week. I don't have the date in front of me, but he is always worth checking out, and that is a great, great Worcester punk band. I hear a rumor that they might be at the Worcester Music Awards, too, actually, though that lineup hasn't been released yet, so we'll just call it a rumor. I'm here today with Mr. Richard Duckett. How are you today, Richard?
Good, Victor. Yes.
And you've got the cover of today's Go section coming up. And on your feet, the Gloria Estefan musical.
Yes, it's the national tour of On Your Feet. The national tour has been on the road for coming up to 18 months. And that follows a run on Broadway of close to 2 years. So it's based on the music and lives of Emilio and Gloria Estefan. And, of course, they had very interesting story background. And the musical has been getting great reviews from Broadway to Syracuse as it hits the road.
And our own review is up on telegram.com now. Kevin Baldwin gave it 4 stars.
Yes, and so I interviewed Christy Paredes, who has the Gloria Estefan role.
That's got to be hard.
And she was well prepared for it, though, because she's Cuban-American herself, grew up in the same Miami neighborhood as Gloria.
Oh.
And went to the same college as Emilio. So that was a good, good training, so to speak. But she is a talented musical theater singer and actor, a dancer in her own right. She moved to New York City, got cast in West Side Story. And then she, first of all, got cast in the ensemble for On Your Feet. And when it came time to choose the lead, Gloria, for the national tour, Christy was at an event in Miami where Gloria Estefan was also attending. And apparently Gloria Estefan got up on stage, announced the national tour, and said that Christy would be playing the lead. And this was news to Christy, but of course she was delighted.
Well, that's one way to get them to say yes.
So actually Christy's been playing a
Gloria Estefan either in an ensemble or as she was a cover for Gloria Estefan on Broadway, and now on the road. So she's been a part of her life for over 3 years.
That's a big deal. That's and like you said, the show is getting phenomenal reviews. It's funny because something Kevin Baldwin said in his review really stood out at me. That this is. The inclination is to approach the show as a jukebox musical, like so many others that we've seen, and it's not. It is an actual their actual story with their music, of course.
Yeah, there are several stories involved. One is it was a struggle to become crossover. The Miami Sound Machine had released several albums in Spanish, but it was a tough time convincing record executives that they could make a record singing in English. And when they finally did, they had a huge hit with Cuba.
Yeah.
And then on a more personal level, Gloria Estefan was involved in a bus accident, you know, that took her life. And she was told that she would never walk or dance again, and she proved them wrong.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, she's a phenomenally talented musician, and she's just a really inspiring person. It was funny because I was listening to a few of their songs today on Spotify because I read your story and got earwormed with Conga. as happens with that, once you even... everybody who's listening to this podcast right now, you have Conga stuck in your head. If you are over the age of 30, you're stuck with it. I'm sorry. So go listen to it right away. But no, I was listening to how so many of those songs, the production feels dated, you know, of its time. But the songs themselves feel very immediate, very contemporary still.
Yeah, they're infectious. And
I think they were a little bit ahead of their time, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, at shows, by the end, the audience itself is doing a conga line.
Yeah, I have now twice seen a conga line at the Hanover Theater. Both times with Pink Martini.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a theater that is practically built for it. So I hope that works. All right. What else we got coming up in the world here?
Well, I'm just going to talk about a couple of other stories that I've been working on and writing. On Sunday at Mechanics Hall, the Worcester Chorus is going to be taking on Verdi's Requiem. And there are a number of interesting things about this performance. Usually, choral requiem masses are rather reflective affairs. But Verdi was an Italian 19th century opera composer. So when he wrote his requiem, he put lots of drama into it and color. And it's become one of the most popular choral works in the entire repertoire. And there's an interesting side note about the soprano who I interviewed, Robin Marie Lamp. She's based in Florida. She's been preparing to be the soprano soloist for the first time for the Worcester Chorus Verdi, but she was down in Florida a few weeks ago and was in a opera meets Broadway production on March 2nd, and she got a phone call saying that a production nearby, the soprano who was going to sing Verdi Requiem and got sick. Could she fill in? So anyway, Robin did a 3 o'clock performance in Naples for the opera meets Broadway. Then when that was done, got into the car, went to Fort Myers, and took the stage to do Verdi's Requiem at 7:30. So she got to perform it publicly ahead of her scheduled first Worcester Chorus performance.
That is absolutely hilarious.
So it has all the drama that Verdi would like in
What are
in,
the
in
odds
the show.
Of that actually happening?
I know. It's very unusual. It made the news down in Florida.
Definitely.
So, and the performance itself should be a good one. It's part of was the 160th anniversary of the Worcester Chorus, and it's the 10th anniversary that their music director and conductor, Chris Shepherd, has been with them.
Oh.
So, I love noteworthy events.
Amazing amount of story behind that story.
Yes. Yeah, and... So there's a story about two women in the arts, so to speak, or three if you count the two Glorias and Robin. And then we've got Celtic Woman coming up on April the 7th back at the Hanover Theatre. It's an all-female, all-Irish singing quartet with Tara McNeil, who sings, but she also plays the violin. Mm. And the harp. The group was first put together in 2004. They made a TV special, an album that was released in 2005. I believe it was supposed to be just a one-off thing, but they became phenomenally popular. They've toured the world, made 13 albums altogether, lots of PBS specials, and they combined traditional Celtic music, updated in some cases with a pop feel to it. And so they're coming here. Tara McNeil, she's a classically trained violinist. Oh. And got a first class honors degree from the Royal Academy of Music in Ireland, and had been a violinist with several well-known Irish symphony orchestras. But turns out she had always had a hankering to be a Celtic woman, and finally it came true.
Excellent. Now, I have not actually seen them, but I know they visited the Hanover Theater several times.
Yeah, they were last here 2017.
I always hear great buzz out of those shows, and you know, I have yet to be. It's always ill-timed for me, but I would like to see them because I've listened to them, and they're gorgeous, especially if you're a fan of that type of music.
Yeah, I mean, they're very popular, you know, for what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
A couple of other things to note that are coming up. You might think that when the Worcester Chorus is going to do Messiah, that it's Christmas.
Usually.
Because that's the way it's been for 100 years. But this season, Music Worcester flipped script a bit, because Handel's Messiah really was written for the Easter season, and for this season, they're actually going to perform it close to Easter on April 13th at Mechanics Hall.
Can I just say, I never actually knew that, and now that you say that, it makes complete sense.
Yeah, I know, it's just one of those things, you know, it's a Worcester tradition, and
well, I mean, it's
doing it at Christmas.
It's an everywhere tradition. I've seen it on the West Coast and Christmas.
Yeah. Well, it varies from community to community, you know.
Yeah.
In England, I know that they it's always performed at Easter.
Well, things right over there.
When I tell my brother that Christmas is coming up, so it must be Messiah, he doesn't know what I'm talking about. But he is a vicar in the Church of England, so that would explain it. But so it'll be interesting to see how it goes this year. It's always the chorus always does a good job with it. They're certainly well versed with it, and usually they have great soloists for it. So there's something to look forward to there. And let's see, well, there are a couple of other things you might want to note is Avatar meets Avatar at Tuckerman Hall on April 5th. Two musicians from slightly different genres with the same last name. But don't ask me any more about it, because I've been trying to arrange an interview, and it hasn't come through yet. So
if they're on the off chance that they're listening to this podcast, Telegram.
Yeah, and on the same note, Yo-Yo Ma, give me a call. I hear you're coming to Mechanics Hall for a couple of performances on April 7th. I shouldn't say performances. No.
It's a lecture, isn't it?
No, I'll be in trouble for that. No, it's a lecture at 2. and then a lecture and a partial performance at 5 o'clock. I'll be able to tell you more once I've spoken to him, if that ever happens.
Excellent.
And then one final thing, if we're in a classical mood, the Worcester Chamber Music Society is going to be performing at Assumption College on April 12th. And I like the theme of this particular program. It's featuring works by blacklisted composers.
Oh.
In other words, works that the authorities
clamped down on,
didn't care for too much. And I think that includes the Nazi government of Germany.
Indeed.
So that should be interesting. Apparently, the powers that be didn't care for Felix Mendelssohn's Piano Trio Number 1.
That must be
very subversive. Yeah. And Eric Wolfgang Korngold's Piano Quintet in E apparently was also worthy of reprimand.
How paranoid does an administration have to be threatened by works like these?
Yes. I know.
I mean, obviously that they struck an emotional chord, and they were not happy with that.
No. Blacklisted. You'd get into trouble for even listening to it on your gramophone.
I know. It's absolutely it's mind-boggling. And I know. I mean, not that there's no censorship in the United States at this time, but it's a very different sort of censorship. But
so that's. I mean, there's a lot more going on, but I think that's about it for me for this time.
I just really quick want to make a couple additions. This is a really big week for hip-hop. We're taking the big jump there from classical to hip-hop, which we seem to always do here on this podcast. There are two fantastic shows. One is tonight at Starlight called Big Timers Showcase, and it's got a lot of local rappers from around the region. There's also another big showcase tomorrow at Beatniks, which is going to feature another, like a whole separate different group of mostly Worcester-based rappers. Both shows are probably going to be really high energy and really exciting. And the big names, up-and-comer rapper Lil Mosey, is going to be at the Palladium on the 30th. And a couple of the rappers that were in the Beatnik showcase will also probably be at the show that I'm hosting on Saturday at Nick's of the Midnight Mystery Cabaret, which members of the Four Element crew will be there. So I'm really excited about that. Quickly on the comedy front, too, we've got at Wuhaha, and I just actually went to Wuhaha for the first time. I saw Orlando Baxter there, and I rather liked it there. Anthony DeVito is going to be playing there, and he's very funny. I've listened to him online a few times. And also, Wootenanny is going to be presenting a show called Polytheist, which is a one-man show by Boston comic Brett Johnson. It is it's about, as he puts it, it's about him being a married 21-year-old monogamous evangelical, then the opposite. So, of course, it's a whole thing. So there's a lot going on right now. Please, if you want to find out more, pick up our Go section in today's paper, pick up our Friday section, and, of course, on Sunday, our Act section, which is packed with things. That about wraps us up. You have been listening to Worcester Culture Watch. For more, read our arts and entertainment coverage in the Telegram and Gazette and online at telegram.com. As always, our music was composed by DJ Manipulator. Thanks, and we'll be back soon.